Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Mobile hunters, are you looking to make the move to saddle hunting this year? Or maybe you just want to add a few new pieces of gear or upgrade your current saddle gear? If that's the case, then head over to TetheredNation.com where they've got all mobile hunters covered. Whether you're new to saddle hunting or an old timer, Tethered is your one-stop saddle shop. From saddles to ropes, sticks, ascenders, whatever it is you need, they have you covered. I've personally been using their gear for the past three seasons. Now my base setup consists of the Phantom saddle and the Predator platform. And if you're wondering why I've chosen to use their gear above all else, here's the cliff notes. They're innovative and pushing the mobile hunting forward overall. They cut no corners and prioritize the safety and performance of their gear. They care about the community that they've created, and their gear allows me to hunt free. And above all else, I like to support good people doing good work. If you're interested in upping your mobile hunting game, then head to TetheredNation.com. This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. Skull Brew Coffee roasts premium single origin coffee, guaranteeing to deliver the freshest coffee directly to your doorstep. The kicker? They're 2% for conservation certified and donate 10% of their proceeds back to organizations who support the interests of our hunting community. So go to skullbrewcoffee.com and pick up one of their three killer roasts and fuel your hunt and fill more tags with Skull Brew Coffee. Welcome to the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you are listening to episode number 229. Today, we're rolling into part number two of my conversation with my good buddy, Greg Litzinger. So stay tuned. Up, everyone. Happy Wednesday to you. Hope you are doing well. Hope you are feeling fine. It is a rainy day here. Happy Mother's Day to you. Any mothers out there that are listening? I'm not sure how many. I should probably check into that. See how many of the lady folk actually listen to this podcast. But happy Mother's Day to you, fellas out there. Hope you did something nice for your mama for this Mother's Day, or for your wife, significant other, whatever mothers you have in your family. My daughter actually is the hero of Mother's Day in this house. She did all the brunch cooking. She told me what my wife wanted for a gift, and so all I had to do was go purchase it. So she made me look good on this Mother's Day weekend. But I did get a chance to get out and do just a little bit of hunting this weekend. Finally got out into the turkey woods, if you could even call it that. It was a pretty miserable attempt, to be quite honest. Headed back to the family farm for a little turkey camp with my father-in-law and my buddy Tate, who you guys have heard on this podcast before. Turkey hunting was pretty weak, but the pops the night before were pretty good. That's that's kind of how I'll classify that. So basically got rained out. I was watching the weather, and it looked like it was going to be hit or miss, but it looked like I could get the hunt in and that it was going to stop raining about the time I'd want to get into the timber in the morning. And you know, got there, had some pops with the fellas, stayed up too late, got way too little sleep, woke up early, went to head out. But when I woke up, realized it was just pounding the rain down. So I decided to just have some coffee and let the rain kind of wash out. I was watching the weather and it looked like it was going to kind of roll out. But what ended up happening was it didn't really roll out and give me a break until I don't know, probably like eight o'clock or something like that. There was a small window where I actually got dressed and got ready to go out. And as soon as I walked outside, it just started dumping again. So anyway, ended up getting out, doing a little bit of turkey hunting, saw one turkey. It basically, I saw it running from me. So that was the extent of my turkey hunting. Still here in PA, can only really hunt till noon. The first 2 weeks, I think, this past Monday, it'll open up for the, you know, where you can hunt all day. But truth be told, it was just good to go back and see some of the old timers back home and spend a week, spend an evening in camp and shooting the breeze and kind of hanging out. It was good for the soul. So that was really kind of the extent of the turkey trip, but not gonna belabor this up front here. Gonna just kind of jump right to it. Before we do that though, be sure to head over to skullbrewcoffee.com, pick yourself up some coffee. And then if you're interested in any Truth from the Stand merch, you can head to truthfromthestand.com. Check out the merch tab and pick yourself up some sweet swag. But today's show, got a cool show. This is part number two with my good buddy, Greg Litzinger. You know him, you love him, the bow hunting fiend hailing from New Jersey. This is part number two from the follow-up from last week where we did part number one, where we really kind of talked about the property that we scouted together and all the cool sign and, you know, setups that we had found and stuff like that, which I feel pretty good about going into this coming season. This second half is really talking more specifically about what Greg has been into this off season and some of the places he's been scouting and what he's been finding. Specifically, there's some big woods he's really kind of turned his attention to, you know, just as it's closer to home. You know, a lot of the places where he's hunted in the past and that he's been kind of venturing out to is a little bit more of a jaunt, a little bit more of a journey from home. And, you know, as a lot of you guys out there that can probably kind of understand or empathize with, you know, Greg, you know, is a dad just like I am, working guy and with a family and stuff like that. So not always have the opportunity, if you want to hunt, to be able to make that 45 minute hour drive, hour and a half drive, or whatever it is. If you have some parcels close to home, those are always kind of good to investigate. Greg's got, you know, a rather young kid, kiddo at home. So, you know, being home is important. And so he kind of focused in some areas that were maybe closer around to where he lives. That'd be easier and less time consuming for him to get to. He can still get out in the timber, can still hunt, but just not quite be so far away from home whenever, you know, if he's needed to get back quickly for whatever reason. And so he's been scouting some of these areas and he's run into some really great stuff. And, you know, I think what you'll hear a little bit from him is just kind of a little bit surprised as to what he ran into. I've seen some of the pictures and stuff like that he's texted me, and he's definitely found some hot little spots, that I think, and Greg will play his cards right, that he has a really good chance of killing a really good deer, in these areas this year. So with that, we're going to go ahead and jump into today's podcast. And as always, thank you all for listening. One thing I want to dive into real quick is just, I know you've been putting out some videos on YouTube. So if you've not checked out the Bow Hunting Fiend YouTube channel, you should be checking that out, because he's putting out a bunch of really cool videos about breaking down, you know, different pieces, you know, how to select the right tree, buck bedding, all this, you know, all that kind of stuff that he's known for. But you've really been spending a lot of time in a big woods piece this year. And I just want to hear how that's been going, man. Cause I know, you know, we've been texting a little bit. Watched the videos.
Mind blowing.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, relatively big unbroken, I think, without giving away too much information, it's bigger than 900, less than 1400 acres. And it's on each side of the road. Each side of the road has
1400.
Yeah. So it's what I would call a big wood setting, unbroken. There's a few like four wheeler trails or cart roads,
right?
No major highways, no nothing, no ag, just all natural. And I killed my biggest deer in similar terrain, you know, 5 miles down the road, you know, inches wise. Some big, nasty, it's laurels, oaks. Mm-hmm. I mean, oaks everywhere. So it's tough to find where they're. Oaks are dropping because it's just
everywhere.
Yeah. But I went in there scouting in a spot I 20 years ago, I was in there maybe 18 years ago. And just one day in the rain, I went out and it was like, holy shit, what did I just step into?
Right.
Totally unexpected. I was looking for spots closer to home because dad and family life,
yeah, like for sure.
An hour, 45 minutes, an hour ride to the salt marsh, and you know, an hour paddle in or something. It's very time
consuming. Yeah. It's the same way with some of the water access stuff that I hunt. Yeah. It's like, it's all the setup with the boat, yep. And you know, you got to get it out and get all your gear in it. And yeah, it's,
So I just went walkabout in the rain, and it just one thing just kept snowballing. And I'm like, the further I got away from people, it's like, wow, that's a big rub.
How far back in did you get until you started kind of finding?
As soon as I got about 150 yards away from people.
And how far were the people in?
Close.
Really?
Close to access, yeah.
Are we talking like 100 yards off of like access? Or?
Yeah, because it's Jersey guys, so it's a lot. 90% baiters.
Right. And so as far as I can carry bait in a ladder stand.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So that's, every now and again, you'll see like a hang on. Like, wow, that guy actually has a hang on. All right.
Doing some work.
Yeah. But get about 150 yards away from that. The deer are just skirting around that. And some of these guys' bait power just, there's just, the earth is scarred bigger than this bed right here. They're just baiting the shit out of it. Right. Like, and they're baiting it. I mean, I still found bait piles out there this year in February. Oh, they're still baiting in February. So it's like, all right, cool. Yeah. Yay.
You're going to see a lot of 1.5-year-olds.
Yeah, not my thing, but hey, good luck, guys.
Yeah.
But just get away from the people. It's just in this little thick pockets. It's just rubs. I mean, I found rubs. I showed you some of the rubs.
Yeah.
Some of these rubs are so big. I know people that hunt there have seen those rubs. How did you not see them? Well, maybe they haven't seen them, but I'm actually afraid to post them because it's like people know exactly where I'm at. Because some of the rubs are that big. You're like, what the fuck made that?
Right.
It's like
elk.
Yeah, basically, because I'm standing next to the one rub. And I mean, it is, there's time marks, up, my chest height.
Right. And we've already established you're like 5'10 and a half.
Yeah. So that's a big deer. Yeah. That's a wide, tall, tiny deer. And those rubs where they're rubbing a tree and they're hitting a tree 12 inches behind. And you're just like,
right.
I just don't even have, and it was like one after another, like this whole core section of like signpost rubs.
Right.
And it was like, I don't want to hunt anywhere else. Right. It's the sign is, and then I started finding all these scraping areas where, I found four this year. When I say scraping areas, I mean a half dozen scrapes, just 4x4 caliber scrapes, just everywhere. And you're like, rubs all in scrapes. And you're like, man, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is just crazy because it's only, say, figure 1,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I found four scraping areas like that. And it's like, wow, that's just intense.
So was there any consistency as far as where you were finding scrapes or where you were finding big rubs or where you were finding where they were bedding? Was there any
relatively flat?
It's flat.
You don't see much terrain features on Onyx or GPS or anything. Cause it's just, there might be 5 foot elevation, 10 foot elevations. You might see a small little depression. It's pretty much just me just following the terrain like we were doing today.
Yeah.
Just taking a look because it's laurel. So a lot of them, you kind of hunkered down. Well, I'll get down on my hands and knees and just look.
And see where the tube is.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to head this way. And that's the first big scraping I found. Literally, it was pouring down rain. I literally had my rain jacket over my head and I'm just crawling, looking down, kind of crawling through this laurel because it was dumping. And I just kind of came up when I came up to it and was like, massive rub. And I was like, what the? And it was like, just scrapes everywhere. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's just scrapes everywhere. And I was like, how do I don't even know where I was. I pulled my phone out. It was pouring down rain. I can't even use my phone. I'm like, where am I? So I'm like, I got my phone jacket unzipped and I'm trying to dry my hand off. And I'm like, where am I? And the service isn't the best. So it's like, this is not where I'm at. So I literally sat there for 20 minutes just in the dumping rain, waiting for Onyx to click back up to find my signal. Cause it was like, I got to get back here. And then that just led to other things. And it was like, it's just insane. The amount of buck sign, huge buck sign and rubs all different shapes and sizes.
So how far apart is this sign? Is it all kind of congregated in aggregated in one area?
Couple hundred yards apart, little pockets of sign, which is weird. Cause that, go through, it's like, aren't massive rubs here.
Yeah, I mean, because usually when you see real big sign like that, you'll see some other sign scattered about, but there's usually that one pot, that one spot where it's like, okay, this is the congregation area, right? This is where the action's happening, right?
And it's relatively flat too. I think that's probably why, it's some of it's off, the bedding I found, it's typical buck bedding, the swamps behind them, back cover, et cetera, et cetera. Balloons, thermal pools, all that stuff.
Right.
And it's just random. It's nothing's really random in deer, but you look at it, even now, if
it
I
looks
look at
random.
It, yeah. It, but I still haven't figured out why they're they're doing things there. Like some of the scripting areas, like I get, you know, the one video I made with the pick a tree stand. I was up high on the scraping area, and the way the wind blows, I was like, I'm just going to get these trails going everywhere. So once I got back down into the swamp, everything just kind of funneled down to this one point. And it was where the creek is, you know, you'll die, you know, 10 foot in this way, like you're going up to your balls, you know, right. And 10 foot this way, you're going up to your balls. But it makes a little bend, and there's just dirt there, like hard dirt, and a deer crossing right there. And it was like, four or five, you know, I think there's actually like six trails kind of meet at that one point, and there's just two massive scrapes right there. And then you look across the creek, and there's like a giant rub, and you're like, what the, you know, it's like a two-way rub, and you see the scrapes, and it's right. Like feeding us all the scraping area. And we're like, oh man, I can come up through the swamp with hip waders, boom, sit up in a tree, and I can hunt that spot, you know, all the time, you know, and never cross a deer trail,
right?
Because
how far do you have to walk in the swamp to get there?
Far.
Far. Is it not boatable? Is it like that kind of swamp?
It's walkable only.
Oh, really? Okay. So it's just like muck and gnarly.
Yes. Yeah. So it's hip boots. I mean, you can do it with knee boots, but you're like island hopping. Fuck that. I ain't got time for that.
Right.
Just plow
through it.
Yeah. I got some waist waders or hip waders, and I'll just wear them, and they're brush busters because it's all briars and everything.
Right.
But I'm just finding these spots just by walking and thinking how our deer are going to use this, you know, and using, like, you can see on Onyx, I'm like, oh, it's a little open spot, you know, inside corner mentality. Get there and you're like, holy shit, deer's not everywhere, you know, but it's away from people.
Right.
You know, as soon as you get near to people, the rubs get smaller, you know, and it's like, it's, you just watch it. You get away from people, it gets bigger, and you're like, wow, this is so weird, you know, imagine that. Deer don't like people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you look at stuff on maps and you'd look at it and say, well, there should be deer sign here. And then there's nothing. Yeah. Right. And then, you know, it just goes to show, it's like, you just kind of have to put the work in and put the miles on and like figure out where they're spending time. Cause they're somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's
my buddy, Tony, he was with me. I took him out there twice and he's like, dude, and he's hunted there his whole life basically too. Like, or ever since it's been, you know, you can hunt it. And it's like, I've never even been in this piece of the woods.
Right.
Because it's like, it's just awkward to get to. It's not like, hey, there's easy cart route. Boop, boop, boop. It's like, and then it's like, got to cross swamp, you know, and then get across this swamp. And then and heavy in the fall, it's raining a lot. Like, rubber boots ain't cutting the mustard here. You're going over your boots. People ain't want to do that, man.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just deer bedded in the swamp. You know, I found some buck beds that are bedding just on the outside of the swamp.
Right.
But it's just so much good sign and big sign, you know, like, because my salt marsh this year was rough. I don't know if I got EHD or CWD or whatever, ABC, XYZ, whatever's going on with the deer right now, but that place was just awful.
Yeah, I remember the last time we did a podcast, we talked about that a little bit, and it was just painful.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like the cameras got hot for November 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th range, and that was it, and it was gone. Right. So. And I had, 10 cameras on that one area. It was just nothing this year. So it's like, I'll give it a little break, you know, hunt closer to home. And, you know, because most areas by me, as with anywhere, peaks and valleys, you know, some years it's hot, you know, and it's like, and then some years it's not, you know, like Salt Marsh, I did get more people this year than usual on cameras. So maybe that's it. They're just pushing deer out and they're just somewhere else.
Yeah. No, same thing, man. There was a piece that I was hunted, whatever it was, not last year obviously, but the year before last, and I had really killer deer on camera in that one, and this year nothing on that camera. Now I had a camera on the other side of it. It was a swamp, you know, or it was like a swamp kind of in like hardwoods on either side, and this deer, like on the other side, was better. Right now there weren't any big deer over there necessarily, but like the best deer were over on the other on the other side this year. If they lived, be good deer probably next year, you know, because there was two that were borderline, you know, but it just goes to show, it's like, it's like these things are cyclical.
And you know, some of the spots I hunt, they're, as most of your listeners know, like they're the worst spots that you don't go there and be like, hey, this is going to be easy. It's literally like the hardest. Yeah. Like I'm dumb or whatever we want to call it, but I go in the areas that are just super difficult, and I want to have success in those areas.
Yeah.
Well, and there's gun clubs. They drive it. They push it. And I know in some areas, you know, even where I'm hunting now, like across the street where I shot my buck a few years ago, that place was on fire. And then word got out. I killed that big buck there. And then it was just like, not literally the next year. It's like a fucking light switch.
Right.
Nothing. Stands everywhere. Bait piles everywhere. And you're like, wow, you people don't fuck around, man. Like,
right.
It's like, oh, I'm like, the big deer's already dead. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But so, and then just blow it out and just push his deer out. Cause you know, deer just, they don't like people.
Well, the other thing is too, man, is like, whether it's Jersey or Pennsylvania, like usually whenever someone kills a really big deer in an area, at least this is how I think about it. I'm not really interested in going and rushing into that area for one, because what you just said, like that deer is already, already dead. Right. And these aren't typically places that are going to hold multiple big deer in one spot. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't happen. Right. Like I have a general area, you know, and I showed you all the pictures where I have a couple really good deer, but it's over the course of like several thousand acres.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's all geographically located in a similar spot. Mm. You know what I mean? But they're not in the same area. I could show someone a picture of one of the big deer that I had on camera this year that I was trying to kill, and they could go try to hunt him, and I will be several miles away in a completely different spot with good deer there. And so that's what my priority really has been, you know, because truth be told, it's like the area around here where I live,
it's densely populated.
Densely populated, but I've also not been hunting this particular area for a long period of time. Like this is probably going into only year four, I think, of me focusing on hunting the public that's around here, four or five, whatever it is. And last year was the first year on a lot of these different pieces, you know, so it's taken me a couple years to like...
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
And that's too, a lot of people will see people have success in certain areas, but they don't look at how much time someone has invested in. It's not, I've never gone into an area, scouted it, and the following year killed deer. It's never fucking happened.
Right. Yeah.
It's
the
never,
only times it's ever happened for me is traveling out of state.
It's never happened to me either.
Right. Well, I mean, it's happened for me on like some freelance, like freestyle hunts or whatever, you know, but I was also hunting states that just have,
better density and better genetics.
Better target opportunities, right? You know, it's like one was in Ohio, killed a great deer, right? One was in Iowa, obviously a great place to hunt deer, right?
I heard about that state.
Yeah. It's an up and comer.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know about it yet.
Yeah.
In Missouri, had an opportunity there, saw a couple big deer, you know, but these are states where you can go find good deer, you know. Finding good deer in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, or for our folks who are listening that are in Michigan or in the New England states that are just like low deer density and stuff like that.
You got either low deer density or you have high people density, which is like a lot of, I think, Northeast people deal with.
Yeah.
You got one or the other and it's difficult. It's like, hey, not a lot of deer, but they're big, just not a lot of deer. That takes time, you know, or densely populated area. You got a lot of competition, not only from hunters, but like we were saying, you know, hikers, bird watchers, all those things come into play. Duck hunters, you know,
small game.
Yeah. So it's like,
it's not just deer hunters, you know, it's like, you know, that you're having to kind of, you know, I don't want to say work around, but like, yeah, you have to take into consideration like all those things, you know, that's why for me.
And you look at too, I know me as a kid growing up, when I first got into hunting, you know, 14, 15, 16, I small gamed all the time. I go after school all the time. Once I could drive, you know, get a license, my small game hunting went. So I think that comes into play. You know, kids, high school kids are just getting their hunting license. They live near a piece. They're going to hunt the dog shadow, you know, because they're right there.
Yep.
You know, as once they get a license, maybe I'll travel a little bit. So if there's a bunch of kids.
Or it also becomes less interesting because now I'm going to go hang out with my buddies. So I can drive somewhere, right? So they start to hunt a little less.
You know, you got housing development near or just a road with kids.
That's why I like to hunt behind senior centers. Ain't nobody out there hunting.
And they can't tell you leave. They can't catch you.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't see you.
Just kick their walker out from underneath it. No, that's terrible. I shouldn't say that.
But I think a lot of that comes into play with you know, gun clubs come and go. Like, you got a banner year, Acorns everywhere. You know, by me, the guys do a lot of driving.
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive by their pole during gun season. There's right. like, this guy's massacred the woods.
Right.
And you know that, you know, areas are like, well, it's going to be hurting for a year or two because they kill a lot of nice deer. Well, mm-hmm. you kill 100-inch deer, well, you're not going to have 140-inch deer.
Right.
Next and you year, kill yeah. like a half a dozen of them, plus whatever everybody else killing that's not part of that club. It's like,
right.
ooh.
All of a sudden, like, your deer numbers took a hit big time. Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's why for me, and I know you do this too, you know, it's, you know, I don't rely on any one piece necessarily. Yeah. I expect that, like, I'm going to find good deer this year, probably somewhere where I didn't find them last year. You know what I mean? And, but you start to find some, like, consistency in yeah. certain, in, with certain things, right? So for me, where I will find, you know, likely find consistency, and it's easier said than done, but you just have to spend a lot of time in the woods to do it, is finding those primary scrape areas.
You're very good. Like, your early season trail camera pictures are insane. I look at mine, I'm like, wow, I got nothing. And Clint's like, look at this. Whammo. Look at this. I'm like, wow, all right. Okay.
Well, dude, you taught me well, man. Yeah. You know, it's like spending time with you has worked out. But I try to find a bunch of spots like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But the thing is like, I don't have a secret. The secret really is that I will spend probably more time than a lot of people walking by beds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But what I'm going to look for and find is like, I want volume because yeah. I might need to shift like where I'm going to be yeah. hunting and stuff like that. And that one bed, just like, for example, like the bed that we found yeah. today with that scrape and that yeah. rub, it could be blown up. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Someone might be start using that two track to like yeah. ride a four wheeler like yeah. sometime this year, even though it's illegal in that yeah. spot, but like they could be doing that. Right. And so I can't count on that being like a spot, and that's yeah. probably one, maybe two deer.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I do is I spend a lot of time trying yeah. to find primary scrape areas, even if they're going to hit it at night, to get inventory to know what's close. And then yeah. I'll look to figure out where they're going to, where well, and true. How they're going to move.
And that's, you know, that's a plan, you know, a planned attack, which a lot of people don't have.
Right.
Like
I don't have a bunch of them, but yeah, I've been hunting 20
years. That's what people tell me. I've been hunting 20 years. I'm like, so that's your plan of attack? You've been hunting 20 years?
Yeah.
That's a horrible
plan.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
That's not even a plan. Like,
it's a yeah. statement.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I'll talk shit on my buddy Tony, but like, he does scouting, does all these things. I mean, he's a really good hunter. But he doesn't really plan out his hunts or his vacations. Mm-hmm. He kind of just like, shoots from the hip like he's, you know, 20 years old again. Like, he enjoys being out in the woods, but it's like,
right.
And it's like, dude, like, you had skill set. Just buck. And when he did, there's a few years when he was really, like, on top of his game, he was killing every year, killing right. nice deer. Well, that requires work and effort, like, consistent on a basis. You can't half-ass it because
right.
it shows, you know? And it's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'm good. Well, if I see you. Man, I ain't seen a deer in like 2 months. I'm like, got it. And he has a job where he's not home a lot. So
yeah.
he's a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
Dude, run cameras. Buy a dozen cameras, dude. Be a camera junkie now. You're like,
yep.
the next couple of years of your life, you can't be out in the woods all the time. So mm-hmm. be a camera junkie.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I got, and it's like, this is what you got.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, and I mean, I can understand like the not, going out and doing the work part or the yeah. effort part, right? Because that's like something I do enjoy doing, you know. But that's also why I look for those high probability yep. target areas, right? I'm not going to waste a lot of time, you know, and I'm not good at deciphering rubs like you are, you know what I mean? So for me, it's like when we spend time together scouting, I'm often paying attention. That's why every time we found a rub, I was like, yeah. which way is he going? Because
yeah.
I'm trying to learn how to use that, because the more I can use that, I can start to put the puzzle pieces together more quickly, yeah. right? So for me, at this point, I'm more of a volume shooter. Yeah. Like, I want to know where I have a density of really good deer, and I want them aggregated on a primary scrape, because then I will start to figure out from there, like, based on wind, based on pressure, based on terrain,
yeah.
where are their opportunities and where are the doe bedding opportunities, you know, and how can I put myself in between?
And that's,
you know what I mean? And I'll use cameras to do that.
Yeah, and everybody needs to have something that's their bread and butter, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, you need to find your strengths.
Yeah.
And you want to shore up your weaknesses.
Sure.
But you want to exploit your strengths.
Like, 100%.
You know, it's like, yeah. I'm a very, like, I fix things for a living. Like, I can decipher, I can troubleshoot, like, on the fly, like, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Years of hunting plus, like, my job. So I can see a sign and I can be like, all right, boom. And I don't need to overthink it or overanalyze it because I can look at it and get it. And I can take a quick guess at it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. This is what he's done. Boom, boom. And kind of move on. Where someone like you, you like ask me, well, you're standing in the bed and you want to know why it's here. I can look at it. I'm like, this is my quick guesstimate and right. I can move on. You know,
yep.
3 minutes in later, keep moving.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what everybody has their strengths. And I, you know, hanging out with, you know, all the people I have these last couple of years, like Rick and Long Island and Johnny and, you know, even like stuff I learned from you and everybody, Bo, everybody has what they're good at,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, Johnny's good at, you know, a lot of things, but he's like really good at these things. And it's like, I need to get on that level because like, I want to get as good there
right,
as I am
right.
here. You know, it's like,
we're going to fix your microphone. What are we doing to do microphone check here real quick?
Check.
There we go.
Did it fall down?
Yeah, it just fell down a little bit. We're good. Yeah, no, it's like Johnny is good at everything. Yeah. But like when I think of Johnny, I actually think of like late season.
Yeah.
Like he is like, I've never known anybody that can kill deer in late season like that dude can, you know, and it's just,
he enjoys it too.
Yeah. I hate late season. Not because I don't like to hunt.
I just don't see deer in late season. I'm just a doe killing machine. Like, oh, stacking bodies in the wintertime. Does right here.
Right. Let's go back to talking about like that, you know, kind of, you know, everyone hunts a little bit differently, you know what I mean? And, you know, that was, you know, I think the sooner you learn that you don't have to hunt like anybody else, you know what I mean? It's like you do what works for you and what you're confident in, because if you're confident in it, you're likely to have success versus doing something you're unsure about, you know? And that's why, you know, I know you like to hunt rub lines. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, because it's like, I'm learning as I'm scouting with you. It's like the reason you like that is because oftentimes you're finding rub lines and that's related to bedding. That's related to a buck bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you're knowing that like, there's a buck here.
Yeah.
He made specific buck sign.
Yeah.
Cause a scrape can be does or bucks.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's does. Yeah. You know what I mean? And bucks will use them as communication hubs as well, but you'll see more does hit those than you will bucks, you know? Particular time of year, they become very buck oriented. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like, for example,
very bucky.
Yeah. It's like that one scrape I was showing you today. I have a cell camera on. It's like, it's still getting hit by does every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's their communication hub. But you like scrapes because that is specific buck sign.
Yeah. Rubs
that only a buck could make. Right. And depending on where you find it, it's going to tell you something different, right? Like if you found a couple scrapes and a couple rubs, you're like, all right, laying down a little bit of sign here. Obviously there's probably some does that are bedded close by. Right. So this is going to be that 15th and beyond or whenever it happens to turn on. Right. You find a scrape along a terrain or along a topography line that has no other sign around it. Maybe some oaks. All of a sudden, like, I'm learning from you now. You're going, he's not doing this just out of like, he's either traveling this a lot, you know, like he's either using this frequently and this is like an area he's traveling through, or this is headed to his bed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? One of the two, you know what I mean? And
buck sign, it's like rubs. It tells you what type of deer is in the area. Like some of the rubs we found today,
tall. Yeah.
You know, even the tick marks coming through the brush.
The tick marks.
Yeah. Like
those are the things that like I don't pick up on. Yeah. And that was interesting today because you kept spotting them.
Yeah.
And you were like, he's coming through here. He's coming through here. And I'm like, yeah, no shit. I'm like, that's interesting. And like, they were high tick marks, you know what I mean? Where that's not a small deer.
Yeah.
You
know? And stuff like that. It's like, all right. And then, you know, high, and then there's either, you know, some type of markings on the rub. You look at it like, all right, that deer's got a brow, you know,
because it's
gouging one side of the tree. Well, you start finding them all over the place or like really close together. Like, wait a minute, the last three rubs have been gouges. All right. And they're all kind of pointing different directions. To me, is that it's like he's bedding close by.
You know, so I was just going to say that, like, what I've started to learn from you, and it, I won't say it clicked today. I've thought of it, but today it became a little bit more.
We found those beds, those rubs. We found three different rubs going
Right. All it was, it was rubs headed in different directions, yep. right? Because I think too often I would look for them headed in one direction. And what I'm learning from you now is like, if they're headed in one direction, that's likely how they're traveling.
Yes.
Right. If you find them heading just in two directions, right, and maybe just in one spot, yep. that's an entry exit, yep. right? So they're moving in and out. They're going both ways here. It doesn't mean that it's a bed. It means yep. that like there's a reason why they want to come in and out yep. of here. A lot of times probably does, like yep. the one that we found. When you find kind of rubs in all directions in a particular area, he's spending a ton of time
yep.
there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Which means
coming and going in different directions, which usually for me, I find beds close by.
Right.
Because he gets out, he stretches, you know, because over here grabs a snack or browse a little bit and goes this way. But, you know, rubs all within, you know, say 30 yards, all different directions. That's bedding to me. Right. I mean, maybe
and
not.
And you might not be in the middle of it. He might yep. be bedding 40 yards yep. away from
or some whatever, type of staging area close to bedding. You might not find the bed, but it's a staging area where he's spending some time here. You know, it's almost like daylight. That's right. daylight. To me, that's daylight movement, which is what I'm looking
which
for.
Is what you want. Yeah, yeah. exactly. Because you're close to his bed, yeah. right? And it's something that I know you and I have talked about this. I talked about it with Nathan Keelan, where, you know, a lot of times when, and I think, and this was part of my thing too, just being completely honest with people listening. Part of my intimidation factor of hunting beds was that, like I said to you today, as I was standing in a bed, I never find beds, right? But it didn't mean that I wasn't finding bedding areas where bucks were bedding,
yes.
right? Because people put too much, I think, emphasis on finding the precise bed. You're rarely going to kill him in the bed,
yeah.
right? You're going to kill him coming to and from.
Yes.
So if you know he's bedded in an area, it's more important to know the to and from than it is exactly where the bed is. I think a lot of times because your exact precise bed, man, you better understand the wind, the thermals, and everything because he's probably got more than one there.
Yes, and you have to be, you know, you have to really know what you're doing. It's yeah. one of them things like when I started hunting in the morning, like hunting over beds, that was a long learning curve.
Well, yeah, because like they're going to come in all kinds of funky ways.
That was rough because it's like, man, I ain't seeing shit.
Right.
I ain't seeing nothing. It's like, and you just tweak it. All right, I'm tweak it here, tweak it there. And then you're like, okay, I have better understanding on what to do. And that was right. a long, it was strenuous,
right.
stressful, strenuous. And like,
well, that's why a lot of times, you know, let's talk about that a little bit, man, because we talked a little bit, you know, when we were doing that scouting about morning versus evening yep. setups. And a lot of that was based around access.
Yes.
Right. But you know, the traditional knowledge is, and I know I've talked to Dan about this because you will hunt beds in the morning yep. pretty frequently.
Yes.
Right. That is the hardest time to hunt the bed because they're not coming in a straight line. They're usually doing some type of hook to check, get downwind, right. do a quick check and bullshit like that. Right. Where typically when they leave a bed, and we even said it today yep. when we were in that one bed or in those couple beds, yep. you would see a rub in a direction, be like he's leaving that way. He's likely coming in this way. Yep. Right. And, you know, Dan will say, you know, hunting morning beds is hard to kill a buck in a, you know, out of his bed or mm-hmm. close to his bed or whatever. You want to, you know, you have a better chance of killing him in the evening yeah. because he's going to just get up and go yeah. whatever direction he's planning to go in. Yeah. And you can predict that a little bit better based on what the wind is going to do yeah. and how he's, when you found that and bed and how he's, where he's looking when he's in that bed.
And I think that comes from, for me, like I'll have them come out in the evenings. I'll set up on the bed and they always go the wrong way. So it's like,
nice.
And that's like the worst thing, especially in the marsh. You climb out, you get on this little island, you're only like 3 feet off the ground. You're like, the buck stands up. You're like, there he is. He's coming this way.
And there he goes.
And there he goes. And you're like, what the, man? And I had so many of those moments.
In the evenings?
It's became frustrating because they can literally go wherever they want. Yeah. For me, I took that, you know, and I learned a lot from like the Beast and, you know, mm-hmm. Dan, those guys. And I took what I knew. You know, by fucking up so many times.
Well, just by experience,
And his videos and the Hunting Beast one, I kind of just merged it together. You know, and I know, like, there's some guys that hunt private that are very, like, Andre's a very good, you know, morning guy.
Yeah.
You know, he has success. And it's like, all right, elk hunters, in the morning, get up high. You know, there's mm-hmm. just certain guys. I'm like, all right, I'm going to just kind of do my own thing, how my brain works. Because I'm like, he wants this to be in this bed. I'm just going to get within 35 yards of this bed, and I'm going to shoot him how he's coming in.
Right.
Because that's the destination.
Right.
You know, in the evening, he's like, well, I'm just going to go this way. Mm, and that's, you know,
yeah.
You know, so for me, like how my brain operates, like I'll get in the bed, sit in the bed, look, I'm like, all right, there's all these trees. Okay. He might J-hook. He might not. they don't always J-hook. You know, they J-hook a good portion of time. They're more interested in their back drill. And if it's a primary bed, they might not J-hook it because they come there all the time.
Right.
And it's like, and you know when you see a primary bed, you look at it, you're like, mm-hmm, yep.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? I don't think anything we found today was primary bed.
No. You know, the rock ones, maybe, but it's kind of hard to tell because
it's on a rock.
That depression, look at that 1,000 years of use right there.
If you made a depression, that's a big deer, boy.
But so for me, like my brain was like, all right, I can work with this because he wants to be here and I can just circle around and get to that and work with that. My brain processes that in a way that to me is like, okay, I can make this will work.
Right.
But in the evening, it's like you do everything right. And he just goes somewhere else. And then you're like, wow, all right. And I had that happen on numerous, you know, evening sets. And in the mountains, I'm the worst evening hunter. I don't even know why I go out. I don't see shit.
I'm the complete opposite. It's like I rarely see stuff in the morning. I will almost, I have a much better opportunity at night. Except that one, like, area this year where I had... Well, it was the only encounter. Oh, no, that's not true. I had a couple of encounters there, but it was the one encounter with a shooter. That was in the morning. That was at like, I don't know, it was light out at 7. It was right before Thanksgiving. So it was maybe like 7:30, something like that, whatever
time,
it was.
Time, baby. He's bedding close by. He's there at 7:30.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah. I mean, he was on a zombie walk, so it's like he could have been just checking or whatever. But
it's like my buddy Todd, the UP bow hunter, he's loves the mornings too. He has success in the mornings, and he hunts marsh and swamp, and it's, you just need to, whatever your strengths are, just amplify it, work on that, you know, and you're going to make mistakes, man.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people like myself, I'm not afraid to make a mistake, to lose to win mentality. Like, all right, I'm going to lose 99% of the time. That 1% is fine.
It's going to be money. Awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be great. And a lot of people are afraid to, what if I blow this deer up? I don't care. Enough spots. It's like, on to the next.
I was just going to say, it's like, that's again, going back to like the whole idea of like the way I approach scouting and stuff like that is I try to find like my off season in my like early season, summer through like whatever, and that's again, why I like bigger pieces. Cause I'll try to learn the best sections of a big piece. Yep. You know what I mean? To where it's like when the deer shift, chances are they're going to shift to where I've already been looking, and I probably already found their sign there too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That was kind of the goal today. Yeah. It was like, I know there's a good deer here. I have a couple of them here that I know.
That's a huge deer. It's not a good deer.
Yeah, it's a huge deer.
Yeah. Let's just be clear about this, people. That's a huge deer.
There's no good deer in Pennsylvania, especially where I live. I had assumed he was around, right? And I was like, I don't believe he's moved that far. Right. Yeah. And that was what today the goal was like, let's go find the other part of this property that he's using. Cause I don't think he left it. Like it's a big enough piece that I think he's still here. I just need to go find the other really good areas here and find where he's spending the time. And what I do is I do a lot of that way, and again, I picked up a lot of this stuff from you and, Chad is kind of the same way. And just like all of our hunting buddies, like we all take stuff from each other, is that I'm willing to go ruin a spot by trying to make it happen. And then when it doesn't happen, go, all right,
how can I make this better?
Yeah. How can I make this better? And I'm going to go on to the next. And so that's why for me, you busted my chops about like having like the killer trail camera photos like early in the year, but that's why I do it. Cause I'm like, I want to get as many opportunities as I can. Because I'm probably going to screw, if I have 4 really good deer, I'm probably going to screw 3 of them up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'll do that knowing that like I've got other deer to kind of move on to or whatever.
The video I'm making now about another terrain features and tree stands, I actually talk about that because I have a lot of spots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a primary bed hunter, but mid-October I kind of shift more towards, the scrape lines, scraping areas. And 90% of my spots turn out to be shit. Awful.
Yeah.
But I don't care because I have more in the bag. So it's like, I don't put 100% in one spot. Like, oh my God, I got a camera picture of this buck. He's a whopper. Odds are I'm never going to see that deer ever again.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. But I have 12 banger spots that I call banger spots. I have 12 of them,
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, all right, on to the next. Because I only have so many days to hunt. So it's like, all right, let's scratch it off. Well, that place sucked. That place sucked. And place I put cameras, I let them run. Like, oh man, this place is bumping.
Right.
I'll go back next year. I'll hunt it this time, you know?
Right. And I try to find spots, you know, that should be good year over. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go hunt spots that like have just good sign from last year, and I'll go check it out and validate it during the season, scout it real quick, make sure the sign's still there or whatever. But again, that's why I go back to like, I'm looking for like cluster of sign. I'm looking for that primary scrape because I want to be able to have like four or five of those in my back pocket that I'm going to have an opportunity pretty much on any of them and, you know, every year.
And your spots, I mean,
people here's talk- one. I don't know if I've ever showed you this one. Here's one that was on that one primary scrape. So there was a one big deer that I showed you during the season that was hitting that licking branch all stretched out with the, like the big shoulders. Then there was this guy too.
Hi.
Yeah.
That's Tank City.
Yeah. And that was on the 18th of October on that primary scrape. We were talking about that today too, like the prime dates.
And also too, when that time of year you plan on hunting, like I do a lot of, I'm a better October hunter. Mm-hmm. So rubs usually come into play.
Right. Yeah.
So those just kind of mesh, and I've always kind of been that way, and that's just what worked for me.
You know, right.
Maybe because back in the day, we used to have to apply for an extended permit when I first got into hunting, and those some years I didn't get it extended. I couldn't hunt in November, and we only had the month of November to hunt. Those years I didn't draw a tag basically. And it's like,
right.
Or I'm a kid. My dad's like, well, all right, we'll put in for 27 and 63. Well, my dad would get 27, I'd get 63. I don't drive.
Right.
So it's like, it's like,
you're out of luck.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, there's odds like that. So I think just from years of whatnot, you know, I just became an October guy. So rubs and October go hand in hand, you know, and then beds kind of morphed in off of that over the years of,
well, it's like you were kind of doing that already before you knew probably about beds specifically because you were hunting rubs, which that time of year is in relationship a lot of times to beds.
Yep.
You know, and not always, but like, you know, a lot of them at that point.
Yeah. So it's just, you find what works for you and exploit it. You know, like everybody has strengths.
Right.
And it sounds mean saying this. We all, I guess I'll use an analogy here, but we all work with people that have been doing a job for 20 years, 10 years, and they're horrible at it.
Yeah.
We all know hunters that have been hunting for 10 or 20 years and they're horrible at it.
Right.
Sometimes it's not your thing.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, like you can't be elite at all these other, you can't be elite at everything in life.
Right. And it doesn't mean that they're not, that they aren't having a good time or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like there's some people who just,
especially public land. If you got private, it's different, because I work with guys that, you know, feeder drivers. They got farms. They kill monsters every year. Mm-hmm. Ladder stands on edge of fields. And you're like, yeah. And you talk to them, it's like, half of them know what's going on. The other half,
not a clue. Right.
And it's like, wow, that's just.
Right.
And they, like, some of these guys sometimes will give me advice.
Right.
And it's like,
unless you're teaching me how to set a feeder up.
Yeah. It's like,
go ahead and
it's
stop.
Like, you know, I just, like, the one guy this year, the feeder driver, crossbow. He's got a bad shoulder, but he shot this deer like 60 yards or 70 yards with a crossbow. I mean, an absolute tank of an 8-pointer.
Was it one of those ones that shoots like 7 arrows at a time?
But I mean, this deer was like, so you look at it, you're like, man, what the? But he hunts near Kennett Square. You know, he's got access to these things. And it's like, wow, that's a deer of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And he shoots deer like that. I won't say regularly, but every now and again, he gets deer like that. And it's like, because he has the spots.
Right.
You know, I'm going to sit here in November and the deer coming out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the other reason too, why it's like, you know, look, you know, going back to like, you know, I had a good pool last year, shall we say, right. Of deer, you know, that doesn't mean I'm going to have it again this year. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It's like, you have to, like, every year has to be unto itself. Yep. Right. Like, I can find these spots and I'll go, people are probably sick of me saying it, but like, I'll try to find these high density kind of like areas that where deer are going to congregate, right?
Destination points.
Right. And I'm doing that because I'm trying to get inventory, you know, more than anything, right? Those just happen to be really good setups too, potentially. But I'm really trying to get inventory because I'll know at the beginning of the year what I'm working with, you know, and then I can adjust my expectations and my, like, what I want to do that year accordingly, right? So, like, this year, yeah, I was kind of holding out for a pretty good deer because I had a handful of really good deer. You know what I mean? But this year, if the best thing I have on camera is like a 120 inch 8 point or a 115 inch 8 point or whatever, and that's the best I have on camera, or that's, I shouldn't say the best I had on camera, the best I've either seen or the best I have on camera or whatever the case is, I know that what's the opportunity is in the area for me that I'm aware of, then that's what it is. You know what I mean? So it's like not every year is going to be me having
160s running around,
160 inch deer running around. Cause I had
you're not Beau Martonic, you know?
No, I'm not, you know, it's like, you know, but I had like, this year was a good year. I had four deer that were in the range of like mid 130s to 160 inches, you know, on public land in Pennsylvania, not out in the Allegheny Mountains. You know what
there's
I mean?
There's no big deer out there.
There's no big deer out there. No. But
Poconos
just,
is where it's at.
Poconos is well, that's yeah, exactly. Keep throwing shade on my shit, man. Yeah. Like, but no, you know, this year was a banner year, and it doesn't mean that next year's going to be. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm not sitting here today going, I'm only going to try to kill a 130 plus inch deer on Pennsylvania public in the area that I live in next year. Why? Because I don't know that that's even going to be an opportunity or a possibility. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, by some of the tracks and stuff we had found today and what I had seen historically in trail camera data and stuff like that, I would say I'll probably have a couple that are pretty good. To what degree, I don't know. You know, probably better than Pope, most likely. You know what I mean? But how much better? I don't know. You know, that could be a really fat deer that's 115 inches. You know what I mean? It's like, that's certainly possible.
Big gnarly six-pointer.
Yeah, could be. You know what I mean? But... you know, so every year is, I think that's the cool thing about bow hunting or just deer hunting in general is like every year's.
It's constantly changing.
Yeah, it's different. You know what I mean? It's like.
Especially like around here, because you got developments, houses popping up all over the place, shopping centers, farms getting bought up, which changes everything.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly.
And then by May, it's not too bad. But we do have, you know, we lose land for, you know, farmland for this or that, but. You know, some of the spots I hunt is, it'll probably be that way in 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing too is like, look, the area I live in PA, you know, not to poo poo it or whatever, but just calling it what it is, you know, the state game land didn't get the prime land. So like the game lands around here do not look like the public land in like Western PA or in Ohio or whatever. It's literally swamp trash.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or mountain trash that you can't develop, you can't do anything with. And so it became, so it's state game land.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not exactly the process, but like
when the process.
Right. But when you look around at the land and stuff like that, it's not a
primo ag and.
Well, it's just not primo even habitat in general, right? Like it's like.
Some of the browse, I mean, we walk through that clear cut. I mean, some of it, those no browse.
In certain areas, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like those. Couple hundred yards where it's like, this is dead. Like there's just nothing.
Right.
Just trash trees.
Yeah.
Like nothing, you know, nothing good at all.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's one of the challenges, right? It's when you, there's that other layer of, it's not even primo ground.
Browse is super important.
Dude.
Peter.
Yeah. Browse is king. Cause there's just not a lot of ag. I mean, there's a couple places, the one place that was near some water, there was, you know, there was a little,
but even that's not enough to sustain a giant deer herd.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. That's like, there's some doe families that hit it and some bucks of opportunity kind of passed through there at certain points, but it's not like.
That's where, like Johnny and his browse, like I call him the browse king. He knows what they eat, what it's called, what time of year they eat it. And it's like, that's just like green stuff, dude. He goes, green's good. He goes, but not all green stuff's good. You know, and it's like this. And I'm like, oh, okay. I see what's going on here. You know, and looking at. You always like look for nips. Like I pointed that out today a little bit. I'm like, he goes, blackberry briars are great. Not all briars, just some briars. And you know which ones deer want to eat. Just look for the nips.
Right. Yeah. And I do that whenever I'm walking through an area. You know what I mean? Because I'm not a, you know, I've always said I wanted to get better at learning browse and stuff like that so I could kind of decipher it. But the reality is, you know, for folks out there listening, it's like you don't need to know all of it. All you need to do is just pay attention when you're walking through. Now, what you might not know is when they browse that, but pay attention to it at different times of year when you're scouting, and you'll start to be able to tell when they start to browse certain things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because there's no food outside of, you know, there's really very little ag where we were.
Oh, there's nothing.
So these deer are getting, some of these deer were you know, 130s, 140s maybe.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting that big by eating browse.
And the whatever the acorn drop is.
Yeah, and there's nothing really dropping in growing season, basically. Yeah. Acorns is it's a fall food. So
they're
literally getting big on browse.
Browse,
so, yeah. That's one thing I've been really paying attention to, trying to up my game on.
And if they're getting big on browse, it means they're probably got a little bit of age on them because they're not going to get that big that quick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like a couple of those that we looked at today, where you were like, those are some hoss.
Yeah.
It's like, they were probably 4.5, maybe 5 year old deer, which you don't get very often in PA, particularly this part, to get to that size, living on nothing but
browse.
Greenbriars, essentially, and tree bark.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so they have to have a little age on them to do that. Yep. You know, it's not like
and a Midwestern like deer. You said, the acorn crop wasn't too good. Deer might not get big next year. They might not have the fat to get them through the winter.
And we had a rough winter. Yep. We had a hard winter this year.
So there might be some deaths, or might be some deer that are just don't pack on the weight. You know, they're going to pack on the body weight before they do horns.
Right.
So that 140, he might be 120 next year.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
There's nothing you can do about it. Like, my oldest deer I killed in the mountains, 6.5. He was only 117 inches, barely.
Mm-hmm.
Shitty acorn crop the year before.
Really?
You know, 6.5-year-old deer, because up there, 4.5 will get you that class. This is 6.5. Everything's big, but it's horns.
Wow.
I mean, it's big, but it's for a 6.5, you think that's prime. That's
He should be at his peak.
Yeah. And you're like, wow, nothing.
Yeah. He should be reaching his, genetic potential. Well, genetic potential if he had the right food, but he should be as good as he's going to be based on what he has available to him.
So it's like, that's a bad acorn crop. So he suffered, you know, and I've killed 2 4.5 up there as well. And they're bigger than him, score wise, bigger body, bigger everything. And you're like, wow. And that he had 2 years growing on him, but this had just a junk acorn crop.
Right.
And that's all there is up there in the mountains. There's no ag and just no acorns, that's
in trouble. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, man. It'll be interesting to see how
that winter is going to affect these deer.
Yeah. Cause I thought of that, when we were getting all that snow, I was just kind of thinking about it because I was like, man, it's,
and they're not used to it. You're getting a whole generation of deer that don't know how to survive in that.
Yeah. And when we say generation of deer, PA, 2.5 is about as old as they get, right? Maybe.
And that, 3 foot of snow, when's the last time you had 2-3 foot of snow around here that stuck around for any length of time?
Right. I can't remember since I've lived back in this area for going on 11 years, and I can't remember a time in the past 11 years where we've had some snowstorms, but nothing that snowed like that for it was for 2 weeks. Yep. And then it stuck around.
Yep.
And it got cold and it stuck around for a while.
That's John and I were talking about that out there. We found, 3 coyote kills.
Oh, did you?
Winter kills.
Yeah.
And it's just the little ones that the coyotes just eat through everything. They just chomp the bones and, but how that's going to affect some, because they haven't had winter like that in a while. So there's 2-3-year-old deer that don't know where to go winter, don't know where the food is. Yep. Well, that puts a hurting on them. They're struggling to survive. They might not make it. Yeah. The moms make babies, might not make babies, they might die or make babies that are inferior, babies that are weak.
Right.
And there's a whole little ramp up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's interesting. Cause I did find 2 coyote kills actually on that piece we were on today.
Yeah.
One was in that oak flat that I scouted a couple of weeks ago. I found
looking for food. Those deer were looking for food, sending them because they're starving and making mistakes.
Yep. And there was a doe out there that was killed. And then I found that deadhead in around that one primary scrape area, which has a ton of browse in it, right? So, and it looked like a coyote kill as well,
And that's what a lot of, when Johnny brought that up, because this is the first time generational snowstorms that even a 5-year-old deer,
it's going to struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they're not used to that type of weather and snow. Like, where do you go for food?
Right.
I have behind my house, when I first bought my house, I would literally have deer come up and I had they were some type of laurel. They were awful all along the backside of my house. Deer were literally eating because we had snow for a week and a half.
Right.
And I don't have it used by them. There's really nothing at my house.
Yeah.
They were literally pawing the on the septic mound to eat the grass and then eating everything I had around the house. So it's because they were a little starving to death. So it's they're going to go find food
wherever it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, man, we've been rolling here for almost 2 hours. Should probably cut you loose so you can make your long journey back home. Yeah. But before you skedaddle, let people know where they can follow you, find out more about you, watch videos, and do all that stuff.
Instagram, YouTube, Bow Hunting Fiend. Yeah, that's all I got currently.
Sweet.
Enjoy. New videos. Quite a few new videos. Got some more coming out.
Cool. Well, check him out, folks. But it's always good hanging out with you, dude. Yeah, I'm glad we got to do a scout.
For real.
Have to do some more here. I don't know if we'll have time to get another one in this year, but we'll do some more hanging here in the not-so-distant future. Once my shoulder's back to par and we can shoot, maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, my shoulder's getting winging it out. I'm good.
There you go. Yeah. All right, folks. We'll see you soon. All right, folks, that is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. And hell, while you're at it, head over to YouTube and give us a sub there, too. I'd be super appreciative if you'd be able to do those two things for me. And before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners who continue to help us make this podcast possible. Tethered, Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, and Maven Optics. And until next time, we'll see y'all. All right, gang, the new Truth merch is in stock at truthfromthestand.com and on YouTube below any of the Truth from the Stand videos. I've got some new hats, beanies, t-shirts, long sleeve t-shirts, and sweatshirts. There's even a new do hard shit hat for those of us who like to embrace microdosing adversity. So head to truthfromthestand.com and check out the new gear and use the code TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H, and save yourself some cash on the new gear.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.